When my ex-girlfriend left, she said, Nate, there's about 14 reasons I'm leaving you. Oh, no, not 14. It's also your obsession with tennis. And I said, that's 15, love. Topical because of the tennis.
I actually saw that very same joke on Twitter not that long ago.
Yeah.
On
dad jokes. So when you started it, I was like, I like it. I'm a fan of it. But I was like, oh,
I can
know
see your
one.
Face light up as if it was like, he knows the jokes. He knows what the punchline is.
Good joke, good though. One. Yeah.
It's solid.
Very topical.
You still enjoyed it second time round, didn't you, Medus?
Oh, I enjoy every joke more when Nate delivers it. Far better.
I'm never sure when I'm telling these jokes as well. I'm never sure whether to look at myself telling them or you guys, because sometimes you guys throw me off by either responding how I thought you would or not. Sometimes one of you is like, oh, you just kind of sat there in silence.
So you just stare at yourself and are you telling jokes to yourself? Do you practice them in the mirror?
Usually I just look at the green light on my Mac and tell them like that, because I'm just like,
oh, yeah.
But sometimes then I end up, you know, everyone on Zoom, occasionally have a little glance at yourself, like, there he is. That's what happened then. I was like, oh, who's that guy telling a joke?
Stop advertising for Apple and Zoom. We are not sponsored by either. Come on.
Yeah, sorry.
Other laptop brands and video calling, such as Squadcast, who we are using right now, are available.
Yeah. In all good stores.
So is that, now Bretto's laughing. I think that got more laughter than the joke, mate. I'm worried. Yeah.
No.
It seems to happen this bit after the joke gets Lawrence.
That you get funnier, Nate.
Yeah, I kind of wind myself up. I'm like an old car, like Chitty Bang Bang. You've got to like wind me up at the back.
Okay, well, I'll crack on with the score.
Crack?
And
did you say crack?
Did you say crack?
The sad thing is that wasn't even deliberate.
Well,
but we'll get on to that later on.
We'll get on to your crack later. But for someone who hasn't heard that news, they're going to think, why are they talking about
going?
Someone's crack?
Yeah.
But stay with us, dear listener, because we will explain.
Okay, yeah, please do. Please do. We'll get to that. No, there'll be no more detail about my crack. Don't worry.
There will be detail about Mike Crack. You're right.
Oh, yeah, there will. Yeah, yeah, come on.
It's not up. Lawrence's crack, there won't be, but Mike Crack.
Yes.
The new Aston Martin team boss, there will be. Mike Crack.
Oh, I just need this to stop.
He's been dreading this. Go on then, Barrett.
Right, okay. The score is 8.
Nice. Ooh. I'll take it.
Like a solid, solid
that's
joke.
That's a good joke.
But you've upped the level, see? You've upped the bar in recent weeks.
I know.
And I really like that joke. And that might have been a 9 early on in the series.
Yeah.
But because you've pushed the limit.
Yeah, like week 6 or 7, that could have been like pushing a 10, maybe. You know?
I think so. Yeah. Because, you know, you started off quite slowly, Nate. You know?
Oh, but hang on, Bretta. Who are you? Like, we want consistency here, all right? We need to know how you're going to apply the rules and do it in a consistent basis throughout every week. This is outrageous. Right.
Like,
is different. This is different.
No, Lawrence, no, that was so not right.
Welcome to The Paddock, a podcast featuring stories following Formula One around the world. I'm Lawrence Bretto, senior writer at F1.com.
And I'm Chris Medland, F1 correspondent at Racer.
And I'm Nate Saunders from ESPN.com.
And we're so sorry for it all falling apart at the start, but for anyone new listening, who there might be, I'll explain why in a sec, it's only going to get worse from here. That was probably the most highbrow conversation of the show.
Yeah.
And yeah,
we call that the highbrow intro, and we just extended to madness from here.
Yeah, but yeah, there might be some new listeners who might have just heard Barreto's train go by again, which is a theme in the pod. But I went on the Missed Apex podcast on Sunday night live for an hour, and only I think dropped off twice. By dropped off, I don't mean fell asleep. I mean, my internet went out. But yeah, I did that last year as well. And at the same time, they gave us a little plug for the Paddock. And we saw a bunch of people start listening. So they said they'd do it again on Sunday. And the same thing happened. We had a load more downloads yesterday and Monday. So thank you very much, everyone, for checking us out. You might have already done it and not listening now, which means this is a pointless little thank you. But if you are still with us, thank you even more so. And thank you to the guys at Missed Apex, because it was a lot of fun to do, and it was very kind of them to send some listeners over. And if you have not listened to the Missed Apex podcast, feel free to do the same, because then I feel like we have returned the favor. But don't leave us.
Yeah, stay with us. But go
this
there.
room in people's world for multiple podcasts, right? I listen to multiple podcasts. You guys listen to multiple podcasts, yeah, right?
Definitely. I don't actually. This is really bad. I don't really listen to podcasts.
what an extraordinary
this is a big revelation.
There was a spell I started to. Do you know the last one I probably was listening to?
You've got to say
regularly
Paddock now.
No, it was the ESPN F1 podcast, mate. When you used to do
that was thanks for bringing that up, salting the old wound.
Yeah, that one's gone.
We had a good year. We picked the wrong year to do. We did 2020, and they said, let's stop there.
Yeah.
Well, I won't get into why. All very boring corporate reasons why. But then we're like, in 2021, we're like, man, we had a podcast like there for this amazing season. And people kept emailing like within the company, like, can we get a podcast? I was like, guys, I'm not even going to have this conversation with you. Yeah.
Yeah, I used to listen to that when I would get running in lockdown.
Because we had a good, good length, lol.
He's hit the deck. Wow. I mean,
I mean, I assume Ben isn't going to cut that out. Hopefully, I can just start
absolutely
again.
Not. Absolutely
no,
not.
Damn it. Damn it. Okay. Well,
you're always so polite, Nate, when you ask Medis to cut things out, because Medis is always going to say no. The default is always going to be no.
Yeah, I know.
That's too much editing. And people need, like, legitimate us talking rubbish and screwing up. So, there, they've got it. They've got 30 seconds of their lives they're not getting back. Anyway, Nate, you were saying...
I can't remember what I was saying. I was just basically saying that we had a good podcast, but now we've got a better one.
Yes, so, that's true. We've got a better one that is fueled as well by fan content. An interaction. We basically love it when people send us anything, whether it's reviews, whether it's jingles, and in this case it's a poem, partly because anything like this gives us just free things, so we don't have to plan, we can just read out other people's stuff. But Andrew Jordan, you may be aware from the last episode, if anyone listened, that he sent us the intro to Night Before Race Day, when he wrote a Christmas poem just before Christmas. Sent it to us, but we didn't do an episode until afterwards. And we're like, you know what? We're going to read it out anyway. And he said, look, I can send the rest if you want it. We read the first part. You guys went crazy for it. A whole two of you replied on Twitter to say, yes, we want the rest. So that's enough for me. So I've got the whole poem here.
But Twitter, two people equals about 2 million people, right?
Yeah.
I like that multiplier.
That's the way news outlets will respond. Like one person tweets something. It's like, this person slammed for wearing purple hat, and it's like, and the basis of their article is this one person on Twitter.
The clamor on social media to hear the rest of this poem was huge.
It was massive.
Multiple people wanted.
Everyone who responded to it said yes.
Yeah.
It's 100%.
Yeah, it was. And that is true. Nobody said no. So, yeah. So Andrew, this is your moment of limelight for Night Before Race Day. And it goes a little something like, 'twas the night before race day, and all through the paddock, the mechanics were sleeping, save for one eating haddock. The heated covers were hung by the tyres with care, in hopes Sir Lewis Hamilton would surely be there. Engineers nestled snug in their analytic sheds, with visions of podiums danced in their heads. Wolf on his headset, Newey in his cap, arguing who was at fault for the Silverstone scrap. Then out on the track, there was such a scatter, the cars shot off the line in a fiery manner. Away the cars bolt, gone like a flash, but in the very last lap, Verstappen's got past. The moon on the breast of the fireworks show would give the illusion of daylight to the audience below. When what to the fans' eyes should appear but a new world champion in Supermax this year? Where's the team principal? Is he in the corner? Over there celebrating, it's him, Christian Horner. More rapid than Mercedes, his Red Bulls they came, and he whistled and shouted and called them by name. Now Checo, now Gasly, now Coulthard, now Webber. On Lauda, on Senna, on Vettel and Schumacher. To the starting line, let's start the show. In a few moments' time, it'll be lights out and away we go.
Ugh. Wow, nice.
I love it.
I had not actually read that the whole way through either before
Thank
I
you.
Started doing that. So I was like, I'm going to screw this up. But top work, Andrew.
Oh, you read it. You read it beautifully, Madders. I thought you were reading a Robert Frost poem. Yes. Lovely.
So yeah, I believe
No, but thanks very much for that, Mr. Jordan.
Yeah, I believe that was our first poem entry to the paddock. We're just going to tick off these milestones as we go. We haven't had anyone send us a song yet. Anyone who wants to send us a song, Nate will sing it.
thanks, mate.
Anyone wants to send us some shoes, Greta will wear them.
Yes.
I'd like to clarify that I cannot sing, but I will sing a song if you need me to.
Wow.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, Meadows has dropped me in it, so I've got to, I can't say.
Oh,
no.
Please. Oh, please, please, please. Someone send the song.
I mean, it's got to, you know, it's got to be a good song. worth singing. Yeah, good song. It's got to be like
your song.
Yeah, top of the charts on Spotify. Yeah, my song.
It's got a chart on Spotify.
Nate,
this is the sort of commitment that ESPN were lacking and is why you're no longer doing. You never said to them that you would sing on their podcast. There's going to be execs at Disney.
Yeah, we didn't have a singing section, and it was noted.
So yeah, anyone who wants to send in a song, please do it now. That would be awesome.
I particularly like the use of Supermax in the poem.
Indeed. Yeah.
Very good.
That's now in my head.
But
yeah, I thought that was the idea.
One criticism of the poem was that it did not mention Aston Martin and their new boss, Mike Crack.
And why would you like to talk about this?
I mean, to be fair.
Well, you know, I mean, I don't know anything about Mike Crack, but I just thought it's a very funny name. And I think we owe the public a service to talk about it. And what does it mean for Aston Martin? You know, what is the dark mystery of my crack?
Nate has been waiting for this.
The untold story of my crack. I mean, there's so many. There's like Mike Crack like you've never seen before. Like all these features that people could be doing and should be doing.
So we were in the pub the other day and Nate brought up the subject of Mike Crack.
Yeah.
And between Meadows and Nate, he came up with several.
Meadows came up with one as well, I think. But
yeah, somewhere. But what did I've you come up find with? Meadows written down somewhere. There was a long list, wasn't there?
Well, Meadows made a list in the pub, and then I've been dreading recording this episode ever since.
Yeah, we're gonna preface all of this with the fact that Mike Crack is very, very good at his job. Has come from BMW Motorsport. Is looks like a good hire for Aston Martin. We'll have to see how he fits into Formula One. But the overwhelming reaction to the announcement on social media was this a joke? Is it April Fool's Day? Because of the name. And I mean, Mike Crack is German, so I'm sure it doesn't actually translate in any way, shape or form in the same way. But as we're childish English people, it does. So we took it and ran. And I can confirm that as professional as we tried to remain, I've not yet had a conversation with anyone who works in Formula One who hasn't at least smiled at the first mention composing themselves.
And if you say you didn't, I think you're lying, because come on, it's a phone.
But we'll get out of our system, because we'll probably be talking to them a lot when they bring out a car that is like 2 seconds quicker than everyone else, and we just have to talk to him about how Aston Martin are dominating, and we're like, oh yeah, we were laughing at your name, and now you've won 6 races in a row. So we just need to get this in before we actually have to do serious work, don't we? Let's be honest. Now, where is this list?
Yeah. Get this in, Mike Crack. Come on. Anyone? This is basically, this is it. This is the episode.
Essentially, let's talk about Mike Crack. Was, I think, the best one, because does anyone know much about Mike Crack?
No. I don't.
No, I didn't when it was announced, I didn't know much about him. But then from having looked back at it, it seems like he's had quite a lot of success to his time at BMW.
This is genuinely it. We were like, we've got to try and properly talk about Mike and not laugh. And it's difficult.
I saw a great tweet on this. It was Tommy Bellingham from WTF1. And he said, it was like Mike Crack's friends when he told them that he wanted to go by Mike and not Michael, and it was Toto Wolff going, "No, Mikey, no, it's so not right," which really made me laugh. It was a really good meme.
Yeah, it was. It was all over social media with those reactions. Even when I was filing copy, and the guy's like, "Oh, I mean, we've got to be careful with how we write the headline. that was where we most of our fun came in, didn't it? We were thinking of the features that you could legitimately write that you normally would do for anybody, but that the name would then add a double entendre, so to speak.
But I was reading a bit about him this week, and you know, Lawrence Stroll, since he's taken over that team, has actually been saying, hasn't he? Like, you know, he's not just bought a team for the sake of having an F1 team. Like, he legitimately wants to turn it into a title-winning team. Like, they're doing the whole factory, completely. Just everything about that team, if you look at it from now compared to like 3 years ago, is new and different. So the fact that Lawrence Stroll's making that appointment, I know it, like, the Strolls can be quite an easy like figure to kind of like, you know, almost hate on a little bit. I know a lot of fans do, but like, he knows quite a lot more than people give him credit for. It's a decent appointment. Obviously Otmar's not there anymore. And I thought they were just going to, you know, nab somebody from within F1. So it's always interesting when people go outside. Like, Seidel with McLaren has been a huge like bonus for them. So we'll see. So yeah, this is me just proving to myself and the listeners I can be very mature talking about Mr. Crack.
Good work, mate. I'm proud of you.
Thanks, man. That's it for the year now. It's just back to jokes.
I think that was a really professional look at Mike Crack and his addition to Aston Martin.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. A deep dive into Mike Crack. That was
that is about as in depth as we're going to get with anything on this podcast, isn't it? If we're honest,
pretty much, I'd say.
But I'm with you. I think actually could be a really smart appointment because it's from outside F1, and I think as you mentioned with Seidel, I mean Aston Martin seem to look at what McLaren do quite a lot. Obviously, Whitmarsh going there is like reflective of what McLaren had in the McLaren group, and they want to do something similar at Aston. They actually had the head of communications at Aston Martin used to be head of communications at McLaren as well. And there's just a bit of a team that's coming together there that have worked together before at McLaren. I think they hired the McLaren head of digital went to Aston Martin as well. So a lot of their content has started to look a bit like McLaren's. But the reason they're doing it is because since McLaren started turning things around and heading in the right direction, I mean, their fan base has been really engaged. They're a very popular team. They're a team on the up. And Aston have thought, well, that's a good blueprint to follow, which I actually think, as much as it must annoy McLaren to be like, well, you're copying us, like Aston Martin copying.
I was just about to make that joke. Aston Martin following another team's blueprint. But, never happened before.
But that is, you know, that's the sensible thing to do, isn't it? You look at something that works and take lessons from it. And obviously they can hire Seidel, but if they've seen similar signs in Mike Crack, then they've gone for him. They've both laughed at that.
I'm skipping straight over that. I don't think there's a greater compliment that can be if someone copies you. I think if someone's copying you, it means you're doing the right thing. And McLaren already several steps ahead of Aston Martin. So
I think McLaren are a few steps ahead of a lot of teams, actually, in terms of the digital output we're talking about. Like, the stuff they do to engage with fans is pretty kind of ahead of everyone else, or at least it used to be. It seems like a lot of other teams copy that. I know that that's not going to win you championships, but just as a fan engagement thing, they've always been quite switched on, even a few years ago when they were really struggling with Honda. Like, their content was always really good, and I always thought, like, man, this is such a shame that this is great content for a team that is just struggling so badly. But yeah, fair play to them. They've done a lot of good stuff.
It's the whole package though, isn't it? I guess you want the whole operation to be strong. And if you're at a time when you know you probably can't perform on track, you may as well try and improve other parts of the business. On Aston Martin, I think what's going to be interesting, when you bring so many new people in, it's going to take some time for them to gel, even if they're individually, they're very good. And it's actually taken Andreas quite a while, hasn't it? Several years, really, to get everything working smoothly at McLaren, even if they have had that consistent upward trajectory. So it'll just be interesting to see whether Aston Martin afford, or Lawrence Stroll affords them, the time that they're going to need to settle in. Because when you come from outside Formula One, I know he had a little bit of experience at Sauber, but if you haven't really worked in Formula One before, just understanding how the whole business works is going to take time, even if you've got the experience that can be successful in other motorsports. So hopefully that they'll be given the time to do that. But I'll echo what you both said about Lawrence Stroll. He's got some successful businesses, hasn't he? So he must be doing something right.
It's funny you mentioned Mike and BMW Sauber. I'm going to just stick with one, either first name or last name now, so we don't just keep going
MK
down the rabbit hole.
I'm going to call him MK.
MK. I like that. Okay, so with MK. And yeah, he was at BMW Sauber, which obviously wasn't in the end, massively successful. It had windows of it, but BMW pulled out. From that, I think actually he's probably learned a lot about big budget team with high expectations, with good facilities as well, but how it just doesn't automatically translate into success. And having that knowledge, I think, will really help, because Aston, like, obviously the budget cap means they can't just spend as much as they want, but they will get the ability to choose where they want to spend their money, because they're never going to be wanting for it. So that's probably good experience for him, actually. I know, like you say, it was quite a long time ago now, like 15 years and so, or maybe more. But yeah, he does have that experience from a while back, so it won't be completely alien to him. But yeah, that's, I think, another reason why Aston maybe went for him was for, it's not, you know, I said earlier that maybe, you know, a bit of an unknown when it's from the outside, but I guess to them, maybe not such an unknown, because he has had that prior experience. So will be interesting. There's a lot of shakeups going on, none more so than at Alpine, where really we can't make any jokes with names, but I don't want to say it was a laughing stock, because I actually think there's method to the madness at Alpine. But
do you?
See, yeah, I do.
I've not been convinced about Alpine, because they had that like three-headed structure that now is falling apart. Well, it has fallen apart.
But that's, I think that's exactly the method to the madness part, because I think Rossi came in last year and kind of had to deal with what was in front of him. He replaced the beat ball, didn't he? And he's looked at it and gone, this doesn't work. And it was quite interesting. Myself and your colleague, Nate, Lawrence Edmondson, did a sit down with Rossi in Austin, just the two of us. And in that, he said he's been making changes and he's going to keep making changes. He knows he is, but it's about the timing of those changes, because you don't want to disrupt anything that's ongoing, and, you know, car prep and all this sort of thing. He's like, you don't want to just make a major change, or I think call it a seismic change, at the wrong time. And I didn't really think anything of it, because Alpine weren't doing a huge amount right then. It was in the middle of the championship battle. There's a lot of other stuff going on, and there were other lines that I kind of picked up on and thought, okay, interesting for the off-season spent, essentially. And then when he does this, and you've got Prost out and really not happy, Bukowski's gone, then I thought, actually, yeah, he did. He said he was going to do this. So I think this is actually part of a plan of his. Whether he gets it right or not remains to be seen. But I do think he's been looking at what wasn't working before, like you say, what was confusing, and gone, well, then I'm going to have to change it. And he's not afraid to, even though he's only been there for, 12 months?
I think Laurent's a really impressive character. I don't know what you felt when you got some one-to-one time with him. But I think the way he talks so eloquently about what he's going to do, and also he hasn't made any rash decisions. I know he's made changes after 12 months, but like a year's a long time to assess an operation that had grown quite a lot anyway. The Enstone facility had improved. They'd made changes at Viri as well. And then he's made some quite big decisions. Obviously, Remy Taffin left the engine department as well, and you could say that the Renault power unit hasn't really been anything to talk about for the last decade or so. Well, more than that, really. He's making decisions kind of step by step, and if you look at a team where it kind of always seems like it's plateauing around that fourth, fifth mark, you're probably going to have to make some big decisions, and if they don't work, then they don't work. But at least you've tried. I'm not saying that they're not going to work, by the way, but I'm just saying that this kind of is the time to make those changes. And I think you just need to simplify things. I get the impression he doesn't need a lot of people around him. I also think he's enjoyed the team principal role a lot more than he thought he would do. I think he honestly came in and thought, I'm going to come in and take an umbrella view. And he's got sucked into the joy of working in Formula One and running a Formula One team. And that's pulled him slightly further down the chain. And he's had probably more control than I think anyone, the three below him, Martin, Davide, and that's it, isn't it? Right. Hang on, why am I getting myself confused? Anyway.
Well, yeah, Prost is an advisor, and then you had...
An advisor, had, yeah.
Like, Permain, like, further down, is like, hands-on.
That's
but yeah,
true.
As your management team, it was basically shared between Davide and Bukowski, I think.
And I think he's pulled himself down into that a little bit more, found he's really enjoyed it, and thought, actually, it's just much simpler if I do it. So I think he's probably going to evolve into a point where I do think they will still want a team principal, because he'll have to pull away to focus on the Alpine wider business at some point. But I think his main aim, and what DiMeo is backing him for, is to sort Alpine, the racing team, out first, get it into a shape, and then he can go off and get the rest of the business sorted.
Yeah, and that seems like a long-term job as well. Like, I don't think Alpine, like you said, Alpine aren't just going to, like, suddenly... I know they won a race last year, but I've always looked at Alpine and Renault, and, like, they've been pretty underwhelming, even with Alonso, even winning last year. It's just always like, okay, what's this team doing? So for their sake, I hope everything you've said there, Lawrence, is right. But yeah, it's hard for me to get excited about that team just because every year they come into it and there's always like a new face or a new direction, or they're like, here's our new mindset. And you think, okay, there's just another one here. And this guy, you know, I agree, actually, Laurent Rossi is very impressive when you hear him talk. But yeah, I'm kind of holding back thinking anything more than just 2 years' time, everyone we're talking about now will just be gone and there'll be new people in and they'll be like, this is our new, and they'll probably be called something else by then as well. They'll be rebranded to like Al Reno or something. I don't know, like merge the two names together. We'll see.
I think, yeah, part of it is from hearing what Prost said as well about his departure. I think Rossi clearly just doesn't give a shit about pissing people off or reputations and stuff like that. He's come in and gone, exactly as Bretis says, actually, that the team was drifting. I guess you both just said it. Like, it was a bit underwhelming that what was a good season for that team was finishing fourth, what, three, 4 years ago? And then the last 3 years, they finished fifth. Last season, 2021, they were fifth again, but they scored, I think it was 29 fewer points or 27 fewer points with five more races to score points in. So, like, they went, in a sense, they went backwards despite the win and despite the podium. And, you know, Ocon did perform well. Alonso really did, like, live up to his kind of hype as well, especially by the end of the season. So I think when you put all that together, it's like, okay, well, the car still hasn't delivered. The team structure still hasn't delivered. And like Barreto says, like, it's not like you're breaking up a potentially winning team and risking it all. You're going for something that's kind of right in the middle of the grid and probably has, it certainly has the potential, doesn't it, to be better because of the links they have with Renault as their own power unit supplier. So, you know, you've got Ferrari, Mercedes, now Red Bull with Red Bull powertrains, but what was Honda? And Alpine are the only four teams that can boast that whole sort of planning situation of we have both the chassis side and the power unit side under our like control. So automatically from that, that should give them a good chance of being at least close to the front. And I think, yeah, like Bretto says, it hasn't come together for so long that might as well take a broom to all and see what happens. But I also was, I don't think we talked about that on the last podcast, but Otmar leaving Aston and everyone being like, well, he's definitely going to Alpine because there was talks last year and stuff. And I wasn't convinced that was definitely happening because I'd heard he'd gone after Alpine and other teams and gone talking to them because he wanted a way out at Aston. But then the way that changes have now happened at Alpine, I think there is space. Because I think, Nate, you said, didn't you, like the last thing that Alpine needed was another team principal type figure. But yeah, that was before half of them got shooted out.
Yeah, so that was when Bukowski was still there. Everyone was like, he's going to Alpine. I was like, well, where does he fit? But I agree now, like, he makes sense if like you're saying, Rossi wants to kind of step back a little bit or needs to. And Otmar's got that immediate experience. Yeah, it looked like it was just going to be a straight swap, didn't it? Bukowski for Otmar. So it's been an interesting couple of weeks.
And you two didn't do this, did you? But I went to an F1 team headquarters this week.
Yeah, I was gutted because going to McLaren is one of the best things you can do. It's such a cool facility. And I mean, all weekend and then Monday, I felt like absolute death. Didn't have Corona, fortunately, but I was basically in bed. Then McLaren sent me the Zoom link and I was like, sweet. Set my alarm for just before it and just slept straight through it. And then you messaged like, were you in that? I was like, no. So I had to message McLaren and be like, I'm really sorry. I completely missed it.
Outrageous. I don't even know what to say to you, Nate.
I know. You're ashamed. Everyone's ashamed. Be ashamed.
But Brett,
well, how was it?
I was going to say, Brett, you weren't there either. Like, why not?
I was not there. No, I was not invited.
Oh, there's a rift, is there, between McLaren and Formula One? Interesting. Yes. Let's spend the rest of the pod speculating wildly.
Let's deep dive into that, Nate.
Yeah.
Into that rift.
Lawrence, care to comment on the rift?
I
no comment. Oh, no. Interesting. Interesting. No denial. Sorry, anyway, Meadows. McLaren before the big exit from Formula One that Lawrence just confirmed to us?
Yes. It was nice. I was, as always, slightly late because I'm just always late. Yeah.
Of course you were.
I just want to say as well, before we started this, Meadows was like, I need to be quite prompt today, lads. I was like, mate, I've needed to be prompt from the day I met you.
I was prompt. I was on time.
You were prompt. I was the latest of the three. I just wanted to throw that in there.
That's true. I am never ever prompt. And with this one, I left on time. My Google Maps said I was going to get there on time, and then I was stuck in traffic getting out of London, and I ended up 10 minutes late. And I remember thinking to myself, I was like, I genuinely need someone else to plan my time for me so that, I clearly don't build in enough of a buffer here.
I've worked this out, Medders.
You need a PA.
I know why this is, Medders. I've traveled around with you enough time, and I love traveling around with you because it's great fun. But if Medders looks at a map and there's like 50 minutes to get to a place, Medders will say, fine, we'll leave 50 minutes to get to that place. And I'm the opposite. If there's 50 minutes to get somewhere, like, all right, let's leave half an hour buffer. I'll leave like an hour before. The Medders is like, no, it's fine. We'll get there. And then as soon as you hit one problem, like even if you forget your keys or I don't know, you spend a bit of time defrosting the car. You're like, oh, no, we're 2 minutes late now. And then you hit some traffic. You're like, before you know it, you're like, we're 20 minutes late. So I respect it because Medders always tries to put a load of stuff into one day. But
I respect the ambition.
Oh, it's super ambitious. But yeah, you just need a bit more of a buffer, even a 5-minute one. I always just add 10 minutes on to like any journey time when I'm planning something. But yeah.
I can't disagree with any of this, listeners. They are spot on.
This is an intervention. This sounds like an intervention for Medders, but really, I'm just trying to give you some advice, dude.
Overambitious is what I'm always told that I am.
Better to be overambitious than underambitious, though. So
true.
I mean, what we were 2.5 hours late to meeting Nate the other day.
That was spectacular.
Having played golf.
Yeah. Fortunately,
knowing we know all the numbers. We know it takes us about 4.5 hours to get around. We know how long it takes to get it. And still, we thought.
When this was being planned in that group chat, I was like, okay, I'm not going to say anything, but it sounds like they're going to be woefully late here.
I would like to point out, you said 2.5 hours. I think it was actually 2 hours because it was 1 o'clock meet and we got there at 3. And half an hour of that time. Okay. Was due to mic crack. So I would like to just have that on the record.
You mean the Aston Martin team boss, or did you have some issues?
No, Aston Martin team boss.
Right, okay, good. Just to clarify.
Yeah.
You have to clarify. It's hard to know.
Yeah. So MK. It was MK's announcement. But then went to MTC on Monday afternoon when I finally got there. And it was very nice. It was just Zac Brown sat around the boardroom table with some tea and coffee and biscuits and chatting all things F1 that he wanted to chat, essentially calling out the budget cap kind of attempts from certain teams to increase how much money they can spend. And they were trying to use the sprint kind of situation and like F1 trying to up the number of sprint races to 6 this year and then saying, okay, this will be the concession in terms of your budget cap for each of the extra races. And when some teams came back, they said, okay, then we want an extra $5 million per, I think, no, on the budget cap to like include that, which apparently is just absolutely ridiculous. So he was quite enjoying kind of complaining about that. He wouldn't talk on the record about the FIA or Michael Massey. Well, he talked about the FIA a bit, but not Massey, because he said, there's nothing I can say right now that is kind of going to be helpful to anyone or good for anyone while there's an investigation going on, whether I back him or whether I like criticize him or what, like while that's going on, I shouldn't say anything about it, which is a bit of a shame, but sort of understandable.
It's annoying as well, because the timing of that, of the results coming out, mean we're going to have a pre-season testing, 2 weeks of media, well, really 3 weeks, and all the launches. We've got the launches, then one test, then a week off, then another test, where really I imagine all the team bosses are going to be saying the same thing. I can't comment on it. And so I think that's going to be a bit frustrating during testing. And that's not McLaren's fault. It's the FIA's fault. And
FIA. Yeah, I'd hope they're not all going to be the same. And I think part of it as well is, I think once one team boss does speak about it or one team member speaks about it, then that will probably give a bit of power to the others to do the same. But also, I think the timeline the FIA have outlined, this is something that Brown did talk about, is they don't think it will follow that timeline in the sense of you hear nothing until the Friday of Bahrain. Like there's, I think there's a couple of the working groups that will happen over the next 3-4 weeks that they expect to be properly focused on what happened in Abu Dhabi and the fallout. So there'll be something to talk about off the back of that. It might not be that it's then in writing until the World Motorsport Council if there's changes to be made, but that we'll have heard a lot more by then. So fingers crossed that happens. But yeah, Brown was on pretty good form. Gave us an hour's time. The MTC is just such a beautiful place as well. I won't lie, you sat there and like sunsetting over there, the lake they've got in front of it. And obviously it's all glass fronted, so it comes straight into the room we're sat in. It's like beautiful sunset. And you're thinking, these are the sort of things that we've missed. We haven't had many of the kind of invites to team HQs and stuff since COVID happened. We've had a few that we've talked about, but yeah, being able to go and do that was actually really nice and get some winter content, because otherwise, like, you get a few press releases about Aston Martin's MK or Alpine, but you don't really get much else. So you kind of are looking for any opportunity to speak to people and find out what's going on and that sort of stuff. So yeah, it was nice. It was just quite simple, really. Hours chat, Q&A, a couple of drinks, and everyone went home. But yeah, it was probably the least glamorous kind of event that we've talked about on this pod, but it was still nice to go around there, and it's always cool, especially when it's like the McLaren Boulevard as well, and you see all the old cars that are laid out, seeing them at sunset sort of thing. You're like, wow, what a cool place this is. So yeah, it was nice, but it was obviously not as nice as it would have been if you two were there.
Thank you, mate. Yeah, I was like, he better compliment me at the end of this story. Otherwise, it's going to be not worth it. Yeah, the Boulevard is amazing. But I think I've mentioned it before, like, as much as I love the MTC, it does always make me think, I'm like, it's now not one, it's two. But you're like, this is a headquarters of a team that's won two races in, what is it, 10 years? 12 years? So, no, 10, it is 10 years, isn't it? Because 2012.
Yeah, yeah. It was the last one, yeah.
So I always think that, and it shows you sometimes that you can have the nicest facilities in the world, and it's not knocking McLaren because I like where they're going at the moment, but always a good reminder that substance over kind of style is still important in F1, because I think the Mercedes factories certainly aren't anywhere near as flashy as that. They've got obviously the two, but they've obviously been dominating. So, but it is nice to go to, and I always feel like you're there, and you're like, man, I feel like the people here must be so motivated to go to work for McLaren every week. So you can see why they're all so happy to work there. So it obviously has that benefit as well.
Apart from the traffic getting in and out, because that's always a nightmare. It wasn't this time, actually, but quite often. Like, you see I can't remember what they call it now, but where they're actually making the road cars next door to the MTC. And quite often, yeah, shift changes mean, like, traffic's an absolute nightmare. But, yeah, that's the problems we have, listeners. I'll tell you the problems we have. speaking of problems, the one that won't go away, we're going to talk about it. I'm going to mention the words FIA inquiry.
Boo. Hiss.
What, Nate? You mentioned the timeline, so I'm not going to come to you first. I'm going to go to Beretta because I haven't heard his voice for a little while, and I like to put the pressure on him. What do you think of what the FIA said last week about what they're going to do?
Well, it's nice that we've got a timeline now, so we know at least that something A is happening, and B, when it is going to happen. I think you touched upon it earlier, Nate, that it is quite late in the day to get a final resolution on it. And you touched on this, Meadows, that I think we'll start to get a picture, though, much earlier than that Friday practice in Bahrain, as to where it's going to go, mainly because I think that the teams are going to want that. Particularly Mercedes are going to want answers on certain things much earlier than the Friday before, a Friday off Bahrain. So I think that it's interesting that the new president was in London yesterday to meet Stefano. And then I think the plan is for him to then go and talk to team bosses, like do a tour of team bosses over the next few days. And it might be that we get, I don't know this for sure, by the way, but it might be that we just get resolutions much sooner because things are more efficient and they put buffer time in like Meadows should do, and that we've got plenty of time to get things done slightly earlier. But it is frustrating that we are here and we don't have answers to some pretty big questions.
It's very FIA, isn't it? You know, if you think about, if you put it into a smaller scale of race decisions, we're often waiting hours, sometimes a whole day for a race decision. We're over a month away from Abu Dhabi and we still don't know any, you know, like, we haven't heard from Michael Massey even. I get it, there's an investigation in, but I just think the way it's all been handled is, it's just been lingering. Like, we haven't heard from Lewis, which is not the FIA's fault, but for F1, I think it looks pretty awful because you've just not heard from anyone except from Wolf, you know, in the days after about what happened there. And it's almost like, I feel like the FIA thought the longer we give this, maybe, you know, it kind of dies down a bit, kind of the fizz goes away. But obviously for Mercedes, we still don't know what Lewis's mindset is. And yeah, it's just frustrating because I think that as a governing body, the FIA probably is never the most transparent organization. and isn't always, maybe not transparent, but isn't always the most efficient. And we don't always, it's very difficult sometimes to get like answers from what they're doing. And I know now we know the timeline, but shouldn't have taken them 4 weeks to let the media know what was going on, especially after something so, like, that's probably the most controversial finish to a race, like, that I can remember. Definitely the most controversial championship decider that hasn't been two drivers colliding with each other, if that makes sense. Like, if you take away all the collisions, that is without a doubt the most controversial finish to a championship that we've ever seen. And yet we're 6 weeks on and we have no idea what the state of play is. So very frustrating. And I think I know there's a new president as well, but as a governing body, there should have been some urgency to, especially to clear the FIA's name, because if nothing else, the FIA came out of Abu Dhabi looking ridiculous. And if it was me, I'd be like, right, we need to get in front of this as quickly as we can. I know they had Christmas and stuff like that, but you know, with 3 weeks into January now, they could have done something. So I hope you're right, Lawrence. I hope it does filter out. But again, if that is the case, then it still just looks funny, because it'll come from leaks. It'll come from, you know, this boss. You know, one team boss will say, like, well, I heard this about Massey, or I heard this is where it's going. And that's just not how official news should come out. It shouldn't come out from, you know, it'll probably be Horner or Wolf or one of those two, you know, with a vested interest in the outcome of Abu Dhabi, who kind of says something, I would imagine. And it's just not very edifying, I don't think, for that. So I'm quite disillusioned with how that all went down. I'm a bit like Lewis, you know, with this investigation part. I just think it looks so bad.
Yeah, I think they definitely could have moved quicker, couldn't they? Like, the I asked about what actually was kind of delivered, because, you know, they did the report to the WMSC in the week after the race, and got told that that was genuinely just like a proper, precise, moment by moment explanation of everything that happened, like, and why procedurally they made those decisions, sort of thing. But that didn't, you know, I wasn't told that then that was like an explanation as to why race control did something or Massey did something that could be passed on to us.
We literally did that on ESPN.com. We did. It was a lap by lap, moment by moment. Like, everyone could have done that.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I guess, yeah, we don't know what was actually being said between people in race control and between certain teams. Stuff, and what info was coming to them. But it's the fact that, yeah, that could have been passed on to us if it was that clear. That, you know, there's no sensitive information in that, is there? It's just, this is what happened and when. Like, that could have been passed on so that people have a wider understanding too of kind of what went down. And yeah, even if they're still going to argue about why or whether it was the right or the wrong thing, there's a lot of these gray areas that people like to fill in for themselves, and that's the problem when you get like a vacuum and you don't have the information coming out. People create the information, and like, I don't mean us, but you know, fans and stuff go, they assume certain things or wonder if certain things, and then they start to believe it because they look into it. And you know, there's been a lot of people have been doing a lot of digging trying to work things out. And Nate, I think it was you and I, or might have been Scott Mitchell actually from the race, we got tagged in a tweet where there was someone on Reddit had gone through the explanation of the appeal from Sunday night in Abu Dhabi, and then worked out actually with the way this went down and what was used, technically these rules didn't apply, so that let Massey off here. Essentially found a way of saying actually Massey was fine to do what he did because certain rules didn't apply, because he actually never did anything to do with them. So as much as they're all arguing about these rules, because he did something different, and there were certain real clauses that you had to find in the regs that allowed him to do it, it's like, you know, actually maybe he was fine. But that's clearly not what happened, because otherwise, the FIA would have come straight out and said it. That would have been an explanation on Sunday night. Well, this is what we did and exactly why we did it. And there would have been no problem. Because there hasn't been that, and like you say, we're over a month later, that's clearly not what happened. But it's, you know, it's other people that have got, you know, fans do have the time, but the FIA are employed to run this sport and govern this sport. And like you say, it just is taking way too long to really get moving on it. And I think that was some circumstance. I'll let them off, like you say, Christmas, New Year, new president. I mean, half the comms team were off, and understandably, because they had that booked off from a lot earlier, because they've been doing 2 years traveling around the world, like nonstop, basically living like hermits to avoid COVID to keep the season going. They're entitled to a bit of time off. But then, like you say, it should have been first working week back in January. Bang, let's get a release out that says this is what will happen now. Like, it doesn't have to tell us any outcomes, but what they eventually gave us, probably 2 weeks too late, is what should have been earlier. And that's why people were getting even more and more angry, I think, that they thought, oh, they're just trying to delay it so that everyone calms down. I totally agree that if this timeline does actually happen where we don't hear anything proper until Bahrain, like, people are going to be actually really angry about that rather than let it go. So that was one of the things that Brown did say was, well, you know, not saying it's right or wrong, but controversies in every sport tend to dilute when the next season starts. And people don't forget about it, but they do have something else to then focus on, which just takes that like focus away from what went before. And I'm still on in the impression that it's going to be damaging if it's not sorted before the new season. So fingers crossed from here, we get a bit more kind of urgency.
You can't imagine a situation where Mercedes are going to be happy if Michael Massey walks through the paddock gates on that Friday and just like, hey, I'm overseeing everything. Cause I'd be like, well, no, like we're not like, cause in Mercedes' head, and again, this isn't me making an opinion. This is just what Mercedes think. They think that Michael Massey, like, basically stole that championship from Lewis Hamilton and gave it to Max Verstappen. And that was the last thing that they saw him do. So I can't see how, yeah, like, I don't know. It's a strange thing. And obviously, Massey, you would imagine, would be at testing as well in some capacity. You'd think, like, I'm not sure if the race director is usually there, as protocol, but you would imagine that there'll be FIA senior people at testing as well. So how will all that play out? It's a very strange situation to be in. And I agree on the, if they'd had the first week, first day, even if they'd said, we don't know who's doing the investigation yet, they should have just laid it all out and said also, like, they should have said on Massey, like, we're going to, like, you know, the decision is here. And yeah, I don't know. It's just really bad. And just one more point on that that I think is really interesting is, you know, a lot of people are saying you can't get rid of Massey because there's no logical replacement for him. I think that also looks dreadful on the FIA that there's no, they've not been actively thinking, especially as, you know, Michael's there because obviously Charlie Whiting passed away so suddenly. There should have been a contingency in place of like, and again, not because necessarily they wanted to replace Massey, but they should say, right, like, we're going to need, we need more options than this, than if, you know, if this does happen again. So I think that's really strange as well, if that is true, because that seems to have been leaked from the FIA. They seem to have briefed a few people on like, well, there's no, who could replace him? It's like, well, that's your problem as well. That's an FIA problem. That's not anyone else's. So I think the whole thing is just, it's really kind of exposed some bad points about the FIA, in my opinion. But yeah, see, I was more fun when I was talking about Mike Crack.
Heady time.
Well then, that's good proper Formula One chat, though, chaps. I'm not sure that that's what the listeners would.
I love the idea that if someone skips our episode, there'll be like us laughing at the start, then us just joking about Mike Crack, and then some very serious talk. And then it'd be like a mashup of that episode would be pretty good, wouldn't it?
Well, how do you want to finish it, Nate? Would you want your signature move to be?
I don't know. Let Lawrence sign off, and I'll think, and then I'll think of the word to shout. It won't be anything to do with MK. Don't worry. I might just stick to normal.
I mean, I have been worried for the whole episode, Nate. So let's see what happens. But thanks very much, chaps. It's been a pleasure as always. Thanks to everyone who is listening as well. Please remember to hit the subscribe button and follow us on our social channels. You can read Nate's work on ESPN.com, Medis' work on Racer.com, and my work on F1.com. And we will do this again very, very soon.
After Nate and I go to Daytona.
Yes. America. That's in America.